Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director. Hi, Kev.
Hiya.
And I'm also pleased to say that we're joined today by our new co-host, Joelle Hillman. Hi, Joelle.
Hey, guys.
Do you want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, I'd love to, thank you. So I'm Joelle, I've been at Awin, it'll be 10 years next month.
Wow.
Congrats.
Yep. I now currently sit in the client partnerships team, so I am the client partner and I specialise in retail and travel.
Great, well it's great to have you join us. So after a month off in September, we're back this month with a brand new episode chock full of content and interviews. Kev and I will shortly be chatting with Commission Factory co-founder and CEO Zane McIntyre. Following Awin's full acquisition of Australia's leading affiliate network, we decided it was high time we caught up with Zane to find out what that means for Awin and Commission Factory, as well as giving us an opportunity to talk about all things APAC in the run-up to Q4's peak period. In our regular Meet the Market segment, I interviewed Awin's very own Jesse Legrand to ask him for an insider's view on the Benelux affiliate market. And for those of you that worried we've completely banished Craig Foster permanently from the podcast, you'll be pleased to hear that he now has his very own, very short, regular segment, Craig's Number of the Month. In it, Craig gets to pick out one number that stood out for him over the course of the month and explain to us what exactly it means. I think it's going to be slightly like Sesame Street whenever the count would appear on screen, but maybe a bit less sophisticated than that. First up though, we've obviously just entered into the all-important Q4 period, which is peak for so many of our clients and partners, as well as for us. And this year it's going to be more important than ever given the impact of the lockdown. Now, Kev, you recently covered this topic in our latest webinar panel and you discussed some of the various factors that will influence performance over Q4 this year, including things like the Amazon's postponement of their annual sales bonanza Prime Day into October, which is just one example. What can you tell us about the webinar and the discussions that you had with the panelists?
Yeah, so I spoke to Thomas from SimilarWeb, which is a piece of software that we use, which has lots of information and data around sort of traffic sources. Bill Fisher from eMarketer and Tricia Mayer from the US Performance Marketing Association. We had about an hour-long chat. It was a pretty in-depth discussion about peak trading, as you mentioned. It was actually just around the time of Amazon Prime Day, which obviously, as you say, fell in October, not July, for the first time. So, you know, the ramifications of that are we're experiencing at the moment, I guess. We looked at other kind of peak trading and various other trends and data points that are kind of shaping how the quarter is going to pan out. I think for me, one of the highlights was the fact that we got some exclusive data from eMarketer. So Bill was able to share with us some of the e-commerce growth forecasts that he expects in November and December in the UK. So, and one of those stats which he was able to share with us was that they're estimating that the UK e-commerce growth will be around about 17% year on year, which seems pretty robust to me, even though he commented that actually projected growth was lower than some other markets, including the US. So that for us would be, I think would be a good sign, a good level of sort of year-on-year performance. What else was there? So another sort of insight came from SimilarWeb. They shared that the referral channel, which is what we would sort of refer to as the affiliate marketing channel, is the best converting channel for retailers during November. The conversion rate around, I think he said it was sort of around 55% higher than the second best performing channel. So he was able to present some pretty compelling numbers as well. And then when we spoke to Tricia, it was particularly interesting to hear from her anecdotally around whether Cyber Monday this year could be smaller than Black Friday. So whether Black Friday actually overtakes Cyber Monday, because in the US, it remains kind of, remains the outlier market for us, as Black Friday kind of dominates in our other markets. And she was talking around how the lockdowns and restrictions that are still in place across the US could impact the Thanksgiving weekend, which is obviously when Black Friday falls. And she's saying it could be very different this year, with fewer people traveling to visit their families, to spend the kind of 3 or 4 day weekend. She said that technology will be kind of bridging that gap for many families, through things like Zoom calls and other social platforms. So she was saying that people will naturally be online more, increasing, I think, the possible propensity to shop, especially with combined with people wanting to avoid sort of the in-store crowds as well. So yeah, if you want to kind of read more about some of the other insights from the webinar, then we've recently published a blog post on it, so you can read that currently on our website.
Now there's quite a lot happening this week with the launch of PI Live, the big annual industry conference that is usually held in London, and this year's edition has naturally had to migrate online. And from Tuesday, the event will be held virtually, so attendees can tune in to the various sessions from the four-day conference anywhere in the world. AWIN is featuring as one of the event's content partners, which means that on Wednesday, you can join us for a packed agenda of sessions being delivered by staff in conjunction with many of our clients. We'll be covering a host of different topics that we feel are particularly important right now, including everything from attribution, app tracking, supporting small businesses, and what the implications of the lockdown in e-commerce and the performance industry are. Now, there's still time to register for the conference and to join our sessions, which promise to provide a great mix of insight and debate around these subjects and more. And Joelle, you and Kev are actually co-hosting a session as part of our agenda. Can you tell us a bit about the plans for that and also about the kind of wider agenda?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously our session's the best, so we'll touch on that one first.
I mean, I'm not co-presenting. Joelle is doing all of it.
You were there in the background the whole way.
I was in control of the slides.
And morale.
Yeah.
Our session is really cool, actually. We've got a couple of advertisers and a couple of publishers to share some of their success stories with us from the last year. And these are award-winning success stories, so we won some PMAs of these guys as part of these campaigns. So we've got Dorothy Perkins and the Groupon Reach Network joining us for one story, and then Revlifter and mobiles.co.uk. So different sectors, really different publisher types and different technologies, so I would definitely suggest tuning in for those. We have actually in our agenda a second brand event as well. Amy Hadley, our account director across CS, has got some of our brands on board to really just talk about the last sort of 6-9 months, challenges, forecasts and predictions for the future. We have one of our board members actually opening the session. So yeah, that's Wednesday at 2 p.m. And that's Adam Ross. Really, again, talking about what we've learned and how our industry is probably going to change forever based on 2020 alone. And then a couple of just really juicy topics that are obviously hot for 2020. So we'll be covering attribution, and that'll be with our attribution partner SingleView. We'll be covering app tracking, and that'll be our in-house Clem, who really pushes and supports all of our app tracking functionality. And I feel like I've forgotten one. Oh, AWIN Access, of course. So Mish, one of our directors who's really been heading up this project. We've seen huge success from AWIN Access in the UK already. So if anyone who hasn't heard of it, it's really our entry-level solution for affiliate marketing. But we've started to roll that out across other territories this year as well. So it's really getting bigger and even more exciting. So covering off some success stories there as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks for that little roundup of the event. It really promises to be a fascinating series of sessions over the course of Wednesday and obviously the wider event as well. But we'll now jump over to our interview with Zane McIntyre, CEO at Commission Factory, where Kev and I found out more about the recent announcement of AWIN's full acquisition of the leading Australian network and the latest news out in APAC. Hi Zane, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you very much. Yes, we're coming out of winter and we're now going into summer, so it's beautiful here in Sydney, Australia.
Very different to back over here in London at the moment. Very drizzly, the leaves are all dying on the trees. It's fairly miserable. So now obviously like I wanted to get you onto the podcast primarily because AWIN had already made a strategic investment in Commission Factory last year, but the latest announcement confirms the full acquisition of your company. So congratulations on that. But what does that mean and how is that going to change the dynamic or the status with AWIN and Commission Factory's partnership?
Sure. Well, I mean, it was obviously a long road from the first time that we had our conversations with Awin, and we found that we aligned quite nicely in terms of, you know, culture and our goals for the industry. And that's when we did the first tranche, the minority stake, back last year. And this year, Awin made the decision, I guess, to acquire the remaining shares within Commission Factory. And we were all aligned on that, ready to go. For us, it was like the industry's worst kept secret that this thing was going to happen even before the first tranche, right? So, because we'd always worked so closely together. So we were glad to sort of, you know, finally just move ahead and fully be part of the Awin family. And now we have that capability, you know, for our cross-border and global aspirations. And when I say global, at least within the APAC region, because we feel that Awin kind of have the other regions pretty much well taken care of right now. Mm-hmm. And so now we can align better. And we can integrate our teams, our company, our processes and culture just that much more, so that we can give this, you know, fantastic, unified and global experience now to our existing clients who want to get some more global reach. Generally, they from Australia, they want to go to the USA first. Seems to be where they want to go, and then potentially the UK. And Awin is obviously very, very strong in those markets. And so with global account management and support, we can be able to support our clients who now want to go into those regions.
Great. So from Commission Factory's perspective, like what's been new this year for the network? And I've heard the word tiramisu bandied around a lot recently. What on earth is that?
So yes, tiramisu is version 4 of the Commission Factory platform. We just thought version 4 was just really boring, and we have used like sort of sweet themed naming conventions in the past. And so this one was tiramisu because we were doing a sort of a refresh on the whole platform. And I've been told, and I haven't verified this, but that tiramisu was Italian for like a pick-me-up or a refresh. So we thought it seemed fitting. But we launched it last week, and we're glad it's finally done. And I would almost be happy to never hear the word tiramisu ever again.
Well, I'm not a massive tiramisu fan myself of the cake, obviously. The platform update, I don't have an opinion on.
Well, you will see something soon, and the clients are using it, and we actually have some training coming up with the rest of the Awin crew, so they can get a peek at how it all works behind the scenes.
Excellent. So I also wanted to ask you how 2020 has obviously performed for you so far this year. It's been a pretty tumultuous year, and we're now just entering the pivotal Q4 peak period, where we'll see loads of global retail sales events that are so important for so many publishers and affiliates and retailers around the world. So what's been your experience so far this year, and what are your expectations for the golden quarter?
Well, the experience this year was, for us at least, a very positive one in terms of our performance. I mean, obviously, there's, you know, terrible things happening around, and we didn't know what to expect, honestly. So when sort of the end of February, start of March came around, we really had no concept of what this pandemic was going to do. But thankfully, we were in a good position in terms of remote working capabilities that, you know, we were able to, you know, earlier than the government advice, send our guys home and say, take your laptop stands, take all the accessories you need. If you need a chair, if you need a monitor, take whatever you need. And we'll all start working from home because, you know, obviously our staff safety was kind of paramount here as well. And we just didn't know what to expect. So we got ahead of it. Everyone started working from home. And then at least the performance results on the network didn't go backwards. I mean, great, but we didn't know which way this was all going to go. But definitely picked up, and that trend continued, you know, for the first part of the year. And then after this, sort of, let's say we're moving past into July, August, and the results still weren't going down. They were still sort of increasing. For Australia, though, this could have something to do with the massive amount of lockdowns that happened in the state of Victoria. So they got this second wave, and it came harder and faster than what we saw in Australia nationally in terms of figures. So the entire state was shut down. All borders were closed. And if we were looking at the sort of e-commerce results, you can definitely see that the online buying from Victoria was higher than any other state during this July-August period, which is as far as we have results so far, at least from a national e-commerce perspective. perspective. So yeah, that was interesting, and we still haven't really gone backwards. I want to at least say that the pandemic didn't necessarily change buying patterns from people and moving online. I think it just accelerated where we were already heading.
Yeah. And I guess obviously you're moving into summer now. Is the forecast that the as far as the experts are concerned, they feel that the pandemic is on a downward trend, so they're not expecting it to get worse over the summer, and therefore you might see more consumers going back to shops, back to kind of offline, and I guess some sense of normality re-established?
We think that going forward, things are going to flatten a little bit more. I don't think that they're just going to keep going up, but most of the states in Australia never to this massive or full lockdown because the results didn't justify, you know, doing so. And even in New South Wales, where we are, you could walk around outside, even going back a couple of months now, and you wouldn't know that there was this global pandemic going on. Sure, people are wearing more face masks, and that's different. Even I've been wearing them, and I've never really worn them before until, you know, the pandemic. But things, I think, will return to normality, but trends and people discovering these online retailers has I think changed things now. And so we've even had it from people I know where they said, I'd never shopped at Catch before, but now I have, and they have all these amazing products, and now they're regular customers and buyers from an online retailer they hadn't used before.
Same, just on that, I'm interested in the SME piece, because I think Rob's going to come on to talk about some kind of more broader trend stuff that's happening in Australia. But we have certainly in the UK and in other markets in Europe, you know, we have ShareASale, who are very much focused on SMEs. We've really focused on growing the SME piece. And there seems to be this sort of broader digital trend around SMEs sort of getting their house in order from a digital e-commerce perspective. I was doing some research into the Australian market, and there was an eMarketer report that said that almost 30% of surveyed Australian SMEs were now investing more in digital services. So, and that was actually much higher than other markets, certainly in Western Europe. Kind of why do you think that is? What are your thoughts around that?
In terms of this scaled up investment from SMEs?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least in Australia, I can say that a good 30% of our online retail comes from SMEs. So they're a very, very important part of the online retail mix in Australia. And I can only assume even during the pandemic was a time when they were able to scale, and they were also able to see inefficiencies maybe within their process. They are looking at what the products and the services that they offer, and finding that there is a market for it, at least an addressable market for what they have. And so now turning around saying, we can take this serious. This is not just a small business or something that we do on the side. It's now a real business. And I can only hope that some of the SMEs that work with us, you know, we've been able to support through this time. And the results that we've seen from them too even surprised us, like some of these SME guys that traditionally, were just sort of, I guess, good to mediocre sort of results across the network. And then during the pandemic, just this explosion. Although some of them, I would admit, you know, maybe a bit more focused on the current crisis. And so those that are doing these bespoke and custom face masks may not be a long-term thing, but some of these guys have definitely shown they have the capability to pivot their businesses. We've seen just a lot more innovation and ingenuity come out of the SMEs. Because they're smaller, they can pivot a lot faster.
Have you noticed, obviously, you know, they're investing in digital services. Have you noticed that kind of manifests itself in terms of them being more curious about affiliate marketing? Have you noticed a bit of a surge in interest from that sector?
Yeah, we have seen some. I mean, we still get quite a lot of applications from some of these SMEs coming through, or just wanting to know a bit more information. And for some of them, their knowledge was simply just AdWords, that type of stuff, and the pay-per-click stuff through Google, maybe some Facebook advertising. So they didn't necessarily know what else existed out there. And they have taken this opportunity to say, well, okay, AdWords is doing okay, or Facebook is doing okay. What else is out there that we can utilize? And, you know, affiliate marketing is definitely something that's come up for them. And then the performance-based nature of affiliate marketing as well has been then, you know, an interest to them.
Yeah, I mentioned the Q4 peak period earlier. And I just wondered, from your perspective, Zane, like Singles Day is obviously a hugely important sales event within the APAC region. And over the years, I wondered whether or not that event has actually spread beyond just China's borders, because China's always the focus whenever we talk about Singles Day. It's where it originates. It's where we see this huge amount of peak activity occurring. Is it still very much kind of bound within that country, or has it started to spread out? And have you seen any effects of it in the Australian market particularly?
I mean, the first couple of years that we heard about Singles Day, we didn't really see much effect. And that was actually the same as well when it even came to things like Cyber Monday, Black Friday, which we knew about but didn't have any effect here in Australia. Now they've all really taken off. And so Singles Day as well is now something that's starting to enter our annual calendar. But previously, no one even knew what it was. But there would still be a certain part of the population, I guess, that doesn't really know what it is or care to know. But we do have a large Chinese population in Australia. And also, well, until the pandemic, we also had a lot of the international students attending our universities as well. So they're bringing sort of those sales events and the culture from China into Australia. And so Singles Day is on their calendar, and it continues to spread from there. I don't think the results we currently see rival that of Black Friday or the Cyber Weekend just yet. But only going back 3 years, Cyber Weekend was nothing here. And now here it is this massive event with sales just absolutely off the scales. So now Singles Day is starting to see a peak every year. Small, it started off very small. I have no idea what to expect with it this year. This might be the year that it hits more of the mainstream, but we may not know until it actually hits.
I was going to say, I think that for us, it's very much sort of, we're seeing good year-on-year growth, but it's still a fairly ordinary day. But I have certainly seen internally account managers discussing it in the UK, and it does feel as though it's sort of starting to drip feed down, a little bit of filter down into more brands, and they do seem to be just sort of using it as another excuse, I suppose, to kind of run deals and promotions.
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of mentioned just then, like things are changing so rapidly in terms of like new events like Singles Day being incorporated into markets outside of China. More broadly speaking then, what are your expectations or predictions for the affiliate industry in APAC in 2021? Now, obviously that's quite an ask, given that nobody would have predicted that 2020 would have panned out as it has. But I wonder what developments you think we'll see, and also which ones you'd like to see being prioritized by the industry out there?
What do I think I will see in the APAC region? So I guess we're probably going to see more, affiliate networks who maybe our wonderful competitors looking to the region, because it has so much potential going forward. In terms what is it doing now? It's learning right now. So it's finding its feet when it comes to affiliate marketing. So even Australia, which has always been considered sort of, you know, trailing behind, let's say, Europe or USA when it comes to affiliate marketing, I think has caught up, you know, and made some great strides. But there are things that we see over in Southeast Asia that, you know, we saw many, many years ago, and certain attitudes and where sometimes the affiliates were treated as like second-class citizens and you know, not paid on time and not regarded as this extension to your sales team and a part of your team. And so we see that sort of treatment over there in Southeast Asia. And so I think the education piece is going to be really important for Southeast Asia. And that's one of the things that we will be focusing on. But also, like when we came about in Australia, was we wanted to focus on what was important to that country. You know, for Australians, That was why we were one of the first networks in this region who were paying commissions weekly, because we knew, being Australians, that Australians were terrible at managing their cash flow. And so, you know, getting your commissions paid weekly was going to be one thing that was like really important to the affiliates here. Cash flow management was not our strong suit. So, we will always be looking into what's important to the locals over there. And so I think that diversity within payment solutions is going to be really, really big for us, whether it be paying out commissions to things like WeChat and Alipay and these sort of e-wallets that are coming about. That's going to be important because that's where these affiliates will be expecting to receive their commissions. A lot of them over there were unbanked clients, especially in Indonesia. And they just kind of skipped banks altogether, you know, from money in the mattress, skipped the banks and went straight to e-wallets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we need to find ways that we can support that initiative and this new, this fast evolving fintech area that we've seen. And so what was your other one? You had another question for me.
I think it was more around the developments that you'd like to see prioritized. I mean, obviously education is one of them anyway, but whether or not there's any particular areas within the affiliate industry in Australia, in the wider APAC region, that you think you'd be particularly keen to prioritize come 2021.
I mean, I may have very well sort of touched on that when I'm talking about the payment side of things. Mm-hmm. Like that's going to be the important thing. But we're also seeing a region that, let's say for Southeast Asia, where credit cards were not a big thing ever. No one had them. Even, millennials, I think, have credit cards, but it's the next one. What were they?
Gen Z.
Gen Z, yeah. That's
which way are you going? That way.
They don't even
the youngest.
Want. Yeah, that's right. I only just fit into the millennials, by the way. So even when I say, you know, those damn millennials.
So do I. I think that makes Kev the minority.
I'm not a millennial.
Octogenarian. No, sorry. So these guys have no interest in credit cards, and so the Gen Z going straight for buy now pay later. So even as a network, you know, we want to look at ways that we can sort of work more with the buy now pay later and get involved in sort of initiatives that they have now with this new generation coming through. And even when it does go to credit cards, when I say that yes, the next gen, you know, they're not really interested. But over in Southeast Asia, credit cards have only just started becoming interesting. And that is because of the traditional affiliates like, you know, the cashback guys. So they're pushing that initiative because in Asia, a discount is a badge of honor. And, you know, getting a discount and getting money back, they you know, really sort of wear that, you know, that was an achievement. In Australia, we love a discount too. We just don't like to tell people. We like everyone to think we paid full price. But, you know, behind the scenes, you think you're very clever. So credit cards are starting to take off now within Southeast Asia. Because of the cashback guys and integrating with doing the card linked offers and such. So I would definitely love to see us all really sort of come together and how we can unify that online to offline piece. Because even whilst that we know what the puzzle pieces are, it's still getting them to come together is still difficult right now because you're talking some real older legacy technology with some of the credit card providers out there that makes it extremely difficult for companies like us to be able to do this deduplication and attribution and be able to, you know, marry that full holistic experience. So I would love us all to definitely start thinking about that because affiliate doesn't just have to be online. It can absolutely work offline too.
Yeah. Well, it sounds fascinating. I think there's a lot to look forward to over the next 12 months or so. So, but thanks for joining the podcast. And I think this is your second appearance, isn't it, on Awen Talks?
It is. It is. I did it the first time around when Awen took the minority share.
Yes. Yeah. So now we've gone full circle. And we'll look forward to having you on again soon, no doubt.
I'm sure. I'm sure. You know, I seem to be interesting enough at times. So thanks for having me.
Thanks, Zane.
Cheers, Zane.
Thank you.
In our latest edition of Meet the Market, we're finding out more about the Benelux region, which combines Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. And to do so, I'm joined by Awen's commercial director in that market, Jesse Legrand. Hi, Jesse, how are you?
Hi, Rob. I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And I know you've had a busy week. You've obviously had your think tank this week where you've presented lots of insights around the Benelux market, which I'm hoping you'll be able to share with our listeners now. How did it all go?
Well, it was obviously the first time that we tried it in this way. So obviously we, because of the Corona pandemic, we couldn't do a real live event. So we decided to do a digital one. In total, we had six sessions discussing different topics, but I saw all of them, and I'm really impressed of the content that we've created, the amount of people that joined the session. So all in all, super, super proud and happy of the result.
Brilliant. Well, this is actually probably quite a nice segue to go into, because I'm sure lots of insights were shared by your colleagues during the conference itself. So I'll kick off and just ask you what you think it is that distinguishes the Benelux digital advertising industry from other regions around the world.
Well, I think the Dutch are known as early adopters. I remember I had my first iPhone back in 2007 when it wasn't even available on the Dutch market. I think in general we embrace new technology and we have a very good data infrastructure. And to give you some data, we have the highest penetration of internet in the European Union with 98%. We have the highest percentage of smartphone use and the highest percentage of people doing online purchases. I think we're on top of the list together with UK, and with some of the Scandinavian markets. And I think that's why also many digital companies, they see the Netherlands especially as their favorite country to launch and test their products. So most recently, Disney Plus was launched first in the Netherlands. I guess based on that, they can judge how well it's being perceived and how to roll out the rest of the markets.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I mean, looking more specifically at the affiliate channel in the region as well, what's the general perception from advertisers and brands in your region? I mean, you just touched on, I guess, the fact that someone like Disney sees the market as a great testing ground for its new products in the wider European region. What other kind of perspectives are there from the advertiser perspective?
Well, I think in the Netherlands, it's a very mature channel. I think M4N, the company where I started working, which was later acquired by Awin, they started in 2001. I joined in 2008. So it's very mature and I think very professional. I think the channel is really top of mind with most of the online marketeers in the industry, next to Google and social, obviously. I think the overall knowledge of the advertisers is very high and increasing over time. But when we look at Belgium, so obviously Benelux is Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg is totally out of the picture. We don't do anything there. But Belgium is definitely a big part of our business, but it's very different compared to the Netherlands. So that's really a still unknown channel. Still, advertisers rely heavily on agencies and stuff like that. So that's a bit behind of the Dutch market, I would say.
Yeah, that's really interesting that two countries that are so close to one another would have that kind of quite a kind of big gap or disparity between them in terms of their affiliate development. I guess my next question is around some of the biggest challenges that the affiliate industry currently faces in your market as you perceive it right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the biggest challenges of the channel is that advertisers are judging the affiliate marketing channel and individual publishers based on assumption and gut feeling, and I think that's quite dangerous. So we've partnered up with a company called SingleView, and that's available for our advertisers. And we really encourage our advertisers to work with an objective software or statistic program to really see the added value of affiliate in their total mix. So not only within the affiliate channel, but across the different channels. And based and base their decisions based on facts and less on gut feeling. So I think that's really the next step where we have to take our advertisers and the publishers along with us to really show the insights and the value of the channel and base the decisions and how you set up the strategy of the program based on those facts.
Yeah, I think that is going to be more important than ever right now with the pandemic and the coronavirus. It's obviously putting a lot of pressure on advertisers' budgets right now. And so they're obviously going to need to know exactly where their marketing spend is being most effective. And that kind of multi-touch attribution platform is going to be really, really valuable in that respect. Talking of coronavirus, I wonder what kind of impact it's had on online shopping habits in your market and whether or not you think there's going to be a permanent increase like we've seen and it looks like we're seeing in lots of markets around the world.
Yeah, so it was the same here in the Benelux, so Belgium as well as Netherlands. We saw a big increase in sales, especially in April and May. But I think unlike other markets, we went quite soon, as we said, back to normal. The industries that were performing really well was sportswear, fashion, home and living, kids, and food. And I think especially the last one will have a lasting effect from this corona pandemic. I think we have a few pure players like Picnic, which is a client of ours, HelloFresh. They've seen a massive increase of new clients and purchases for home delivery of groceries, and also the more traditional supermarkets. They, I think, really have to increasing their focus and investment in order to gain the upper hand again. So I think that development's really speed up the adoption of home delivery of groceries, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of kind of new developments locally and evolving, developing trends, are you seeing any new or innovative local publisher models or businesses that are operating in the channel that you think are quite interesting?
Yes, definitely. There are multiple ones, but one that I would like to highlight is a company that's really trying to bridge the gap between online and offline. It's called Retail Rush, and they can drive measurable online or offline sales via online campaigns. And they do that by enabling you to redeem your online discount codes in an offline store via a QR code. So what they did is they partnered with one of the biggest international cashier systems, so that basically a consumer can go in and this cashier system can already scan this QR code, so it's directly linked to one another. So we're currently trying to set up some testing campaigns, but this is really I'm very hopeful at least that we can be successful driving this forward.
Yeah, Retail Rush, that's one to keep an eye on in the future, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so just rounding things up for us, how would you sum up the Benelux affiliate industry in just three words? It's a bit of a challenge, but it's one I'd like to set for you.
It's definitely a challenge. I had a thought about it, and I think three words that describe the Benelux industry the most is fun, entrepreneurial, and community. And I'm not sure if you're allowing me to elaborate on that, but...
No, go for it. What would you say?
All right. Well, I mean, so I've been in this business, I think since 2006, but I'm with Awin since 2008. And it's just really a pleasure to work with a group of now we're not that young anymore, but young, driven
and
entrepreneurial people. it's kind of like a tight community. So basically people that were, active in the business then still are now. Very successfully though, along the way we've just had many, many fun occasions where people are just open and willing to share with another their ideas and successes, so that's why I think it's really tight community and therefore a lot of fun to be in this business.
Yeah, well, long may it continue. Thanks so much for your time today. And if people want to find out more about the content from Think Tank, I believe that a lot of that is being published over the coming weeks, isn't it, on the Awin site?
Yeah, on the Awin site and on our blog. So, you can watch all the sessions that we've had there. So, be ready and please have a look.
Perfect. Well, thanks for being our guide into the state of digital and affiliate marketing in the Benelux region today, Esa, and we'll hopefully catch up again with you soon.
Sure. Thanks, Rob.
Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks, Rob. Not bad. How are you?
I'm good. So we've got this new segment, your eponymous number of the month. So what is your debut inaugural number of the month for us?
Well, I suppose my number of the month this month is 36%.
36, okay.
Yes, yeah, 36%.
So what does that mean?
this is the percentage of new customers that we measured across the network over a sample data set for the month of April this year, which was the highest amount of new customers that we've seen in the last 2 years, at least, worth of data. For those same advertisers, so it was across all the network as well. So across the whole of the network, we saw, and it was quite a bit of a way as well. So the closest, it's about 6% higher than the closest month before that as well.
So I'm presuming it's no coincidence that was peak lockdown.
Yeah, it's something that we kind of assumed. I think everyone kind of assumed there'd be more people shopping online, but it's difficult for us to measure that without looking at the new and existing. So there are, you know, there could be other reasons, but I personally would say that is the main reason. Yeah, so lockdown kind of forced a lot of people that wouldn't necessarily consider shopping online to shop online. That's what I would get from that figure, looking at it in isolation anyway.
And I guess that's obviously going to be of useful information to retailers, because that means that there's a changing complexion of who is actually online and how they need to maybe market to them.
Yeah, I suppose it depends the way you look at it, because it could be a temporary thing where people forced to shop online that don't want to but have to, so they did, and then kind of go back into their old habits. We have seen a drop off over the last few months, but it is still higher. So I think a lot of people have spoken actually about how kind of the shift to online has been kind of increased dramatically, rather than, you know, it's always on that trend, isn't it, of more and more people shopping online every year, but actually what's COVID done is it's kind of increased that by a certain amount. So you've kind of expedited anyway the amount of people shopping online now. So to put some more into context as well, what I did a bit of analysis on kind of where these customers were shopping as well. So looking across the kind of typical publisher types on our network, and where they were shopping. Where, Rob, do you think that people were actually shopping for new and existing? Well, new customers were shopping anyway.
Do you mean in terms of the types of publisher sites they were visiting?
Yeah.
I would hazard a guess that they're primarily maybe looking at, I reckon it would primarily be maybe content and comparison.
Yeah, actually, right. Yeah. So I didn't expect to get that completely right there, but yeah. So you would actually assume. Well, I suppose this kind of does fit into some logic around the fact that if you weren't used to shopping online, you wouldn't necessarily look for discounts online, perhaps. And actually,
that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, and while you might be used to using Google for finding information or whatever, that might actually be one of the reasons why people perhaps were shopping through content sites. So content sites in April saw the biggest shift. That was, a good 5-6% increase from the previous month of March. And actually March was still a lockdown month as well. So that's quite a large amount. Comparison engines, we always see new shoppers, shopping through comparison sites. So generally, you know, when we look at the highest amount of new customers brought into the network, I think ever really, January 2019, comparison engines brought in 59% of that, for 59% new customers. So they're always large. They actually have decreased over time. You must, I suppose, it would be probably down to the reduction from some activity in some sectors there, though, rather than the actual general trend. But we did see an increase across March and April for those two groups, above everyone else anyway.
Yeah, I guess you would expect that with the decline in travel, and comparison plays such a massive role in the travel industry online, that contribution from comparison to new customer rates might drop off when obviously nobody's really looking to book holidays.
Yeah, exactly. So same question as well then. What sectors do you think then would you say, out of your kind of preconceptions of it all, where do you think people shopped in terms of sector then for new customers?
I guess I would guess that we're probably looking at maybe fashion and possibly online groceries.
So online groceries, yes. Fashion, not so much, actually. So actually, there was pretty level throughout fashion. Women's wear was pretty much on the same as it was the previous year. Clothing generally was a slight decrease of about 1% new customers. Okay. When we actually look at, so big increases, the big increases were home and garden. And I personally think that was probably down to the fact it wasn't just new customers shopping online for the first time. That's just generally people that shop online. I think even people that do shop online don't necessarily buy home and garden DIY stuff online still.
No.
I think that is still a bit of
a gardener, I can testify to that fact.
Yeah, well, you and your allotment. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, so I suppose like, It is one of those things, I suppose. People like to go into store, don't they, with certain things still.
You need to make sure that the manure that you're buying is, you know, it's the good stuff.
It's the good stuff, exactly. Yeah, you don't want any bad manure, only good manure. Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of like I would have expected clothing and fashion to go up, especially in the fast fashion sector. But then I suppose one of the other reasons why that might have been the case was that I suppose people have less use for clothes when in lockdown, so we could have seen a general decrease anyway.
Is that why you're not wearing any at the moment?
No, I mean, I haven't. I like to sit and do podcasts naked. Yeah, that's probably better.
Well, on that note, I think we can leave that image in our listeners' heads and tie this up. So, Craig, yeah, Thanks for your number of the month. And I look forward to seeing which number you bring to us in November.
Yeah, sure.
Cheers,
Thank
Craig.
Thank you, Rob. Cheers, Rob.
Thanks to Craig, Yesser and Zane there for their insights. And congratulations also to Zane as well, who was one of two AUN staff to make it onto the Performance In Top 50 Industry Players list, alongside our senior product manager, Stephen Short. So well done to both of them. Now, talking of industry awards, we've been nominated for a few at the upcoming IPMAs, haven't we, Kev?
Yep. So we were really thrilled that we had pretty much everything, I think, that we submitted shortlisted, which is great. There's some previous kind of award-winning stuff in there from Dorothy Perkins, which Joelle's already mentioned, which is being featured in PI Live. We're featuring that case study. But there's some kind of nice, really nice new ones as well that sort of reference, some of them reference sort of the last few months and the challenges of the last few months. One of the ones that I was really impressed with was some of the work that Tastecard did, for example. So obviously they were in a situation where people sort of redeeming vouchers in a restaurant, that obviously couldn't happen during lockdown. So they really, they talk about how they pivoted their business and how they kind of built out this loyalty platform, which I think was really impressive. And they did that all via the affiliate channel. So that's also been shortlisted. A number of our US clients have also been shortlisted. We had a client in Brazil as well. And then there's sort of a couple of global campaigns in there as well. So the Nike one, for example, is particularly compelling. Share a Sale also, it was great to see one of their clients shortlisted. And also nod to Commission Factory as well, who also had a couple of their entries shortlisted as well. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we will win a few awards for some of those submissions. One last thing for me on the awards: you can still vote for Best Network and Best Team, and I'm pleased to say that Awin's been shortlisted for both of those. So we'd love it if you could vote for us. It only takes a minute. If you go to performancemarketingawards.com/vote, You can register your vote there. And as I say, we have been shortlisted for a couple of awards there. So we'd love it if you could lend us your vote.
Great. And finally, Joelle, with obviously Black Friday and peak trading just around the corner, what other content can listeners look forward to seeing from Awood in the coming weeks?
So you guys have some Black Friday specific content coming out, right?
We do. We've got a white paper that we're working on at the moment, which is incorporating some of the attribution data that our attribution partner SingleView have been collecting. And that will kind of give a bit of a kind of comparison for what an advertiser who would be utilizing that kind of, you know, cross-channel visibility to kind of advise where they're putting their marketing spend at the moment, versus someone with a fairly kind of basic blunt last click model, and the kind of different insights that you'd be able to gather from those different perspectives. So hopefully, I think it should be quite an interesting read, particularly ahead of peak trading, when obviously it's going to be so important to think about where you're investing your budget. So that's coming in the next few weeks. So do look out for that.
And then from the client partnerships department specifically, so I realise in the introduction I probably only introduced myself, but should have introduced the whole department. So I'm the client partner that specialises on travel. We also have Alex Palmer-Yee, a client partner that specialises in telecoms and finance. Jessica Brown, who is our agency partner. And then Rosalind Beresford, who heads up the department as client partnerships director. So between us, we've got quite a bit of varied content coming out in the next couple of months. You might have already seen on site Alex's telco predictions for 2021. And this week or next week, we should have landing a recession article as well, written by Rosalind. Myself and Jess are working on a sector-specific deep dive, and that's for health and beauty. So obviously Q4 for health and beauty is huge. For Awin, it's one of the biggest sectors in terms of the number of advertisers that we work with in that sector, and also it's huge globally as well. Just specifically within health and beauty, we're seeing huge trends in direct-to-consumer. So I think some of those traditional brands that relied on department stores and resellers are really having to find new avenues to attract customers directly and are using the affiliate channel to do so. And then in December, how is it December in 2 months' time? We are having a travel webinar. So hosting a specific webinar in time for pre-travel peak, just to talk about what 2021 is going to look like, what the offers are going to look like, what the consumer landscape is going to look like, and how we're going to predict, if we can, some performance for next year. Last one from me, actually. So as a department, we also run a newsletter, and that's called The Pulse. So there's loads of different parts of that. We have trending now at the beginning. That's just like some really quick numbers. Sounds quite similar, actually, to Craig's snippet on this show, but hopefully some varied content. We also have a section in there called Ask Us Anything. So we tend to answer 3 or 4 questions that we believe are hot topics in the industry. People can ask us those questions specifically, or we'll sort of just do a rummage across the industry to find out what people are really talking about. So if you want to ask us any questions, you can do so at uk-clientpartnerships@awin.com, or if you want to sign up to the email, we'll add the link into the show notes.
Perfect. Joelle, have you got anyone confirmed for the webinar yet?
I have not. No, it's on my to-do list to start. Hence my surprise that December is 2 months away.
And also, if any brands are listening, or any publishers that have got anything interesting to say.
Definitely. I'd absolutely love some friends to join me in the travel webinar. So we're looking to host it probably second, third week of December, before everyone sort of drops off for the holidays. But yeah, save me listening to my own voice for the whole show. I'd definitely love to get some publishers and brands on board.
Well, I look forward to that. Anyway, that's all we've got time for in today's episode. So thanks for listening in, and we'll hopefully see you again in November. But it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kev.
Cheerio.
And it's goodbye for Joelle.
Thanks, guys.